House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:33 p.m. It's Monday, January 29th, 2018. And before we begin, I want to thank Christie Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kelsey Goodell from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Millett as an alternate for Representative Reinbold, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first in order only of business today is House Bill 129, Fish and Game Offenses, Licenses, and Penalties, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Major Bernard Chastain, and I would recognize that Representative Kopp has now joined us as well. Major Chastain is from the Alaska Troopers Division of Wildlife Troopers. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and then you may begin your presentation. And I will ask, as is my practice, to hold your questions until Major Chastain finishes his presentation. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Bernard Chastain. I'm a major with the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. I'm the deputy director, and today I'll be presenting House Bill 129. And as you have already stated, it deals with fish and game licensing, and there's several points here that I'll go over, and then I have a sectional analysis to go over as well. So if it pleases the chair, I will begin with the sectional here. So the primary focus of this bill is four main points. Number one, it allows a person who receives a citation for not having the appropriate sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license in their actual possession. It allows them to present that to Department of Public Safety, and it could be a correctable citation. So that's a portion of what this bill does. Secondarily, it makes it unlawful for a person to obtain a sport fishing, hunting, or trapping license if the person has had their rights to engage in those activities revoked or suspended in Alaska. Third, it increases restitution amounts for unlawfully taken big game animals and increases strict liability commercial fishing fines for first, second, and third offenses. And last, it creates an option of charging with a violation or a misdemeanor offense for most statutes contained in AS 1605 and 1610. And this clarifies the proper documentation a person must have in their actual possession when engaging in certain activities. And it reorders these activities of trapping and fur dealing to exclude the latter from being a correctable citation. So you see in the bill that it reorders some of these so that the first three are sport activities and four and five are considered commercial activities. And this is important and it's contained in Section 3 of the bill. The next section, Section 2, is amended, and it actually includes the words this or another state. So in Alaska, if you are revoked or suspended to hunt, fish, or trap in Alaska, you are revoked or suspended in another state, territory, or country as well, or and vice versa. However, it does not include this or another state. So we're actually including Alaska as one of those options. So if you're suspended in Alaska, you are also prohibited from purchasing a license here in Alaska. Section 3 of the bill actually is the section which creates a correctable violation. That basically it says that if you're charged with violating this section for failure to have a license in actual possession, you will not be convicted if you produce in the office of the arresting or citing agency no later than 30 days after the issuance of the citation a license previously issued to the person that was valid at the time of the offense. This is similar to correctable citations for vehicle insurance or other types of situations. This section here was added because we often come in contact with people who forget their hunting, fishing, trapping licenses at home when they've actually purchased a license, and we wish to create a way to make that a correctable offense so that when we don't have to issue a citation if they actually have, in fact, purchased a license. Section G in Section 3 says that a license in actual possession may be in paper or electronic form. And this section was added. The Department of Fish and Game desires to create a situation where electronic licenses are allowed. And so as the Department of Fish and Game develops that, once they begin that process and put it forward, there will be a way that electronic licenses are allowed to be presented in the field. That could be And then later on in the bill here, it explains what electronic form is. So that could be on the phone or a device or something to that similar nature. H of that section talks about a peace officer presented with electronic device under G of this section is immune from liability resulting from damage to the device. This was added because of the situation that we often inspect licenses in, aboard boats or in the field with potentially slimy fish hands or a variety of scenarios out there where someone hands a phone over a boat and drops it in the water in that process that basically does not hold our department liable for that action. Section 4 and 5 are the first of the sections that reorder and align penalties in Title 16. So throughout this bill, I'm going to talk about what that means. And whenever I talk about reordering and aligning the penalties, it means this same thing. So in Title 16, there are misdemeanor offenses currently written, and they are there's a variety of different types of misdemeanor offenses contained within Title 16. This bill attempts to align those offenses with Title AS 1255 as a Class A misdemeanor, and those are defined in AS 1255. And so if the AS 1255 changes or the legislature chooses to change the penalties associated with a Class A misdemeanor, those will also change according to what those changes happen in 1255. What this bill also does is it allows for prosecutors to charge offenses as a violation if they think that's more appropriate. So it creates two separate categories of crimes within Title 16, a misdemeanor or a violation offense, depending on how serious that offense is. We already have that ability in the 5AAC and other related administrative code to charge either as a misdemeanor or a violation offense, depending on how serious the offense is. That works very well, and it gives more tools for prosecutors to decide what's the more appropriate to charge. Section 6 of the bill.
And I just note that Representative Ledoux has also joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing, Section 6 of the bill changes strict liability commercial fishing offenses. These fines were put in place in 1988, and they have to do with what's considered strict liability commercial fishing fines. These fines are given to someone, a defendant, who is convicted in court by a court of law, and these are the maximum fines allowed under that penalty for that offense. So you'll see that currently in statute, for a first offense, there's a maximum of $3,000, second offense is a maximum of $6,000, and third offense is a maximum of $9,000 for third or subsequent convictions. These fines are increased accordingly. You'll see they've changed from to $6,000, $12,000, and $15,000. And represent primarily inflation changes, just simply from 1988 to 2016 dollars. They're almost identical in the fine amounts. Strict liability commercial fishing violations are not criminal offenses. They're charged as strict liability, and they're considered violations with a higher dollar amount. Section 7, amend 1605, 722 by adding a new subsection. And this section requires the court system to transmit notice of all convictions under this section to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, or CFEC. Commercial fishermen are applied points similar to driver's licenses. When a person is convicted of certain commercial fishing offenses, it's important that points applied to a commercial fishing conviction be conveyed to the agency responsible for keeping track of the total points applied to an individual. Sections 8 through 16 are aligning the offenses within Title 16. So what those do in Sections 8 through 16 is it removes the unclassified and different types of misdemeanors and aligns them all with Class A misdemeanors and creates a separate section for violations to be charged under those sections. Section 17. Section 17 is titled Penalty for Violations. And under Section 17, you will see that there is, under 17B, restitution amounts. These amounts are put in place when a person is convicted by a court of law for someone who takes an animal illegally. If an animal is taken illegally, the court may impose restitution in addition to the fines or penalties associated by the court. The reason these were put in place in 1984 was primarily because animals and fish in the state of Alaska belong to the state collectively, all of us individually, and when someone takes an animal or takes fish illegally, it's there's a the crime that's associated with that, there's a victim, and the victim is the state. And so the restitution amounts attempt to make the state whole for the value of that resource taken illegally. And you will see that some of them reflect, like number one under Black Bear, reflect an increase from $600 to $900. That was strictly the inflationary rate from 1984 to today's dollars. Other ones, such as bison under number three, you'll see have increased from $1,300 to $3,000. That reflects changes that were made in previous committees that representatives believe that previous committees, those animals were worth more than the inflationary rate that we included. Section 18 is amended by adding a new subsection, and it reads that a defendant may not be ordered to pay restitution under B of this section if the defendant voluntarily turns themselves in to law enforcement. So each year we have several hundred self-turn-in violations where people actually take an animal that they believe was legal at the time and it turns out to not be legal. In that circumstance, if they salvage all the meat and they turn themselves in to state troopers, they are charged with a violation offense. And what this section does is it tells the court that they may not impose restitution if that person has turned themselves in. So it allows, it gives an incentive for the person to actually turn themselves in instead of leaving an animal in the field to waste. Sections 19 defines the electronic form as it refers to earlier in the bill. An electronic form means the display of images on an electronic device such as a mobile telephone, tablet, or computer. Sections 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, and 26 all change the penalties associated in Title 16 and align those penalties accordingly. Section 27 is amended by adding a new subsection and aligns penalties in 1610.130. And Section 28 and 29 is the amended by adding a new section for the applicability and when the act takes place is effective. Mr. Chair, that covers the bill, and I am available for questions.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. Thanks for presenting the bill. I appreciate it. Can you tell me when you talk about electronic licenses, are you going to be, are your folks just going to be able to take a picture of their, is that even thought of, like, you know, if I have my fishing license in front of me or my hunting license, taking a picture and just keeping it on my phone and then showing it to you? Or is it electronic, that the you'll get one electronically from the Department of Fish and Game, and that's?
Through the chair, Representative Millett. So I will answer the enforcement side of this. I also have Department of Fish and Game on the line that can answer how they expect to someday create electronic licensing. But however the Department of Fish and Game decides is the appropriate format for licensing will be okay for enforcement. There are pieces of licensing that require recording of items on licenses, like king salmon, for instance, or your harvest tickets on the back of the license itself. There needs to be a process in place to make sure that those are represented in an electronic format. There's been discussions with the Department of Fish and Game that we've had recently about how that might look, but it requires the Department of Fish and Game to develop that first before that's something that's acceptable.
Representative Miller.
So now when I get my king salmon tag, I'm required to write where I harvested it on that date. So is there going to be an electronic submission for that, or is it still just the honor system? Like when I get one from the Kenai River, I do it. When I get one from the ocean, I do it. So I guess that's why the picture kind of would seem like it would be more accurate.
Again, through the chair, Representative Millett, I can answer for enforcement purposes, and I will defer to Fish and Game here in a second. But from enforcement standpoint, we will enforce whatever is a standardized or what is the appropriate license type that Fish and Game says is okay to present. So if they say a photo is acceptable, then that will be something that we certainly will honor.
One more follow-up, sure.
Well, no.
I'll just add, you're doing a great job. We do have 1 minute limits on questions, but you can ask all the questions you want.
Yeah,
you just got 1 minute.
Just a comment. Maybe we should think about that as some type of friendly amendment that we could put in here so folks can, I mean, if you have your phone and you don't have your license, it might be something we want to think about.
Okay. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions about Section 17. I noticed 2-0 fiscal notes. I might have missed another fiscal note, but it would seem as though with increases in restitution, this bill would have a positive fiscal note. Am I missing something? Or put another way, why does the bill not have a positive fiscal note?
Our Representative Ledoux would want to know at least why it wasn't an indeterminate fiscal note.
There might be a motion forthcoming for all we know.
Through the chair, Representative Kress-Tompkins. So there, this money would be an increase to the state. It would go to the general fund. So there's no fiscal note to DPS. We won't receive any money from it, but it would go to the general fund, the state of Alaska.
Great, thank you.
Follow up, Representative Kress-Tompkins.
I might just stuff two questions into one here. The first is, I'd be interested in knowing what the projected increase in restitution of the state general fund is, if the department, not necessarily now, but later, could provide that answer. All dollars are good dollars at this point, especially if it's restitution for criminal activity. But the question I'd like to pose right now is, I noticed that the percentage increases in restitution amounts for the different game animals vary. And so it's obviously not a straight inflationary adjustment. And I was wondering if you could speak to the rationale why, for instance, the restitution for a moose, for instance, more than doubles, whereas for a black bear it increases 33%. Relatedly, would the department have any objections to language that might automatically inflation adjust these restitution amounts going into the future?
Through the chair, Representative Kress-Tompkins, those are all good questions. So first off, as far as the restitution amounts go, from an enforcement standpoint, if we're doing a good job at what we do in enforcement, part of that is education, and hopefully we're going to have less animals taken illegally over time. So it's hard to put a number on what we would think the increase of restitution would be and what that dollar amount would be, because that varies from year to year and from we view our job, if we're doing a good job, we're actually preventing some of these violations from occurring. Secondarily, you asked about the increase in restitution amounts. And so in previous committees in House Resources and also on the Senate side, there has been a lot of discussion about what is the value of these animals to the citizens of the state. And different representatives have felt different values depending on where they come from or what the food source value is to their community or what they believe the value would be for that animal wherever they're representing. So the value itself has changed on some of those animals because of amendments that have gone through and discuss what those would be. And finally, to your question about inflation proofing, I think that would be appropriate, and is that obviously they haven't changed for quite some time. So by putting some sort of inflation in there, it keeps some sort of a standard in place.
Thank you.
Just on the question about restitution obtained, are the figures the state has received in restitution over the last 10 years, for example, available? Could you get that to the committee in time for our next hearing, or is that something that you don't have organized?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how those are organized. I could do some research and figure out if we could come up with that for you, and if we can, I'll provide it.
Okay. Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. First, on Section 18, where we talk about people voluntarily reporting violations and then not having to pay restitution. So, obviously, in Alaska, sometimes there's a time period that elapses between recognizing that you made a mistake and then being able to report that. So it talks about, you know, within a reasonable period of time. Now, what's the department going to do in situations where you make contact with an individual and then they say, well, you know, I'm reporting it voluntarily. Is there going to be an assumption that they didn't do it on their own before you contacted them and so they're guilty? Or is it going to be more on the idea of, well, they said they did it voluntarily, so we'll just take them at their word? How's that going to work?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's also another good question. We deal, as you can imagine, with a wide variety of those types of scenarios each year. The general belief is that if someone turns themselves in to the state troopers, that requires a lot of fortitude on their part to pick up that phone and make that phone call. It can be a tough phone call to make sometimes. A lot of people are very ashamed that they've committed that violation. They've made a mistake, and they want to do what's right for that situation. And so we treat them accordingly. But on the flip side of that, we also deal with people who have no intention of turning themselves in until we catch them actually in the field with that illegal animal. And then they say, I'm so glad you're here. I was just about ready to turn myself in. And so we have to investigate that as we would any other crime. And if we have every reason to believe that they were going to turn themselves in, then we would treat them the same way.
Thank you. Follow-up.
Representative Eastman.
Now, in Section 10, looks like 13, 14, 16, 21, 23, 25, 27, large portions of this bill, we are stipulating that violations are strict liability. So that if someone, maybe even without knowing the regulation or their offense or you know, accidentally is in violation, we're still going to hold them, you know, fully to account. Why would we do that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman. So that's a kind of a lengthy answer to that, but I'm going to try to summarize as best I can. Fish and game violations are unlike a lot of other violations out there in that we have to be able to catch people that are committing these violations, and a lot of times there is no culpable mental state required. And certainly in 5AAC and a lot of the regulations that the Board of Fish and the Board of Game create, the culpable mental state is just simply negligence that they did it. It's like a speeding ticket. And so what this would do in Title 16, would allow a prosecutor to decide whether it's more appropriate to charge somebody as a violation, which is a lot lesser offense, which is a maximum of $500, versus charging them with a misdemeanor offense. And it aligns that accordingly in statute with the penalties under 1255. So it's defined as a violation in 1255. It's also defined as what Class A misdemeanor is defined in 1255 as well. But I also have Aaron Peterson online from the Department of Law, and he might be able to answer from a prosecutorial standpoint what that would look like.
Why don't we get Mr. Peterson on the line? To a large extent, the strict liability nature of certain fish and game offenses, this is not a change in the law. It's the law today, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. For almost all fish and game violations in 5AC that are created by the boards of fish and game, that is the standard of strict liability.
So this is not a bill in which we're changing the standard. We're just changing some of the penalties related to those violations.
This bill, actually, Mr. Chair, it creates two different categories of charging. It creates an additional charging scheme of strict liability in statute, which does not exist right now.
Mr. Peterson, are you on the line, and can you hear us?
I am, Mr. Chair.
And just make sure you're not on a speakerphone. Did you hear the question that Representative Eastman had?
Yes, I heard the question.
If you can go ahead and answer the question or provide additional insight.
Sure. So this is Aaron Peterson with the Department of Law. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, all of the sections that you referenced are creating the ability to reduce offenses to violations that right now can only be charged as misdemeanor, at least several of them. I think that's uniform throughout the bill. So where right now the Department of Law gets a case and it can only be charged as a misdemeanor, which under Title 16 means there's a mental state involved that the state has to prove, and that mental state is negligence, as the major party stated. Sometimes the troopers or the Department of Law might feel that it's appropriate, given the circumstances, to reduce it to a strict liability violation. But currently, under Title 16, several of the offenses cannot be reduced. So this bill would remedy that and give the ability for the prosecutor to have the discretion to reduce the offense to the lesser offense.
Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And can you speak to the rationale for why we are creating that strict liability component? Yes, I understand it's being reduced, but what is the value to having it strict liability as to otherwise?
So, through the chair, Representative Eastman, again, as I said, it's depending on any circumstance there. You know, it just may be appropriate to have a lower level charge. And this is not necessarily a proof problem that is trying to be remedied here. It's very much an attempt to, through the legislature, give the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety the ability to have a lower level charge for somebody that, like you said, might have made an honest mistake, but it was still negligent. But given the totality of the circumstances, the appropriate resolution might be a strict liability violation. This legislation would give prosecutors, the Department of Public Safety, the ability to either make that the initial charging decision or the ultimate resolution of a case. And again, you know, it's on a case-by-case basis, but these things are evaluated. So it would just be another tool.
Thank you. And I would just note, apparently one of the reasons we've been having challenges here in the judiciary room is the speaker is broken, and that's why the sound quality is sometimes not so good. They're working on fixing it this week, so hopefully by next week we will have clean and happy sound, and our clerk will be happier. All right, next I have Representative Ledoux.
So I want to go back to my favorite topic these days, fiscal notes. So if you increase the amount of the fine, the money goes into the general fund, so the department doesn't have a fiscal note. So what would happen if you decreased the amount of the fine, and so less money went to the state? Would there still be no fiscal note? Is there no way of knowing when something goes into the general fund what it's going to cost the state or what the state is going to get? And I'm not sure who I should ask that question to. Maybe you're not the right person, but I want to ask it to somebody.
You can take a shot unless you want to send down a lifeline, and then we have at least two folks on the line. I assume Fish and Game prosecutor is not the one, but we have a couple of others from Fish and Game. Do you want to give it a try? You want a lifeline?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I'm the person to ask that question to, but I can say Department of Public Safety is a little bit unique in this situation because we're squarely in the middle of the line here. We don't receive funding from the citations, or we don't benefit from that. So we don't receive the benefit of increased fines along the way. It goes to the general fund.
No, and that isn't meant as a criticism of the department. I'm just trying to figure out whether there's any way that this committee or any other committee can know whether or not something is going to benefit the state in terms of revenue or the opposite.
Is there anyone on the line that can answer that question? I'm not hearing anyone. Mr. Dale or Ms. Weber, any insight on Representative Ledoux's question?
I know, Mr. Chair. This is Bruce Dale from the Department of Fish and Games. I don't know exactly why that would be a zero fiscal note. I'll look into it and get back to you.
Okay. That's the best we're going to do today. Next, I've got Representative Millett.
Thank you. One question on Section 2. Do you have a way right now to know if other states, if their license has been suspended? What's the communication between state to state to know if the licenses are suspended, and how do you communicate when we suspend someone's license or revoke?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, that's also another good question. Alaska is part of the Interstate Wildlife Violators Compact, which increases states each year, but right now I think there's about 38 states or 39 states that belong to that, and there's reciprocity with all those states for suspended licenses, just like a driver's license. Not all states belong to it. So we are one of few states that have this statute on our books, which says that we have our own statute which talks about suspension of licenses. A lot of other states don't have this statute and don't they rely on the Interstate Wildlife Violators Compact as part of the reciprocity to make sure that they're suspended. So if someone is suspended in one of the other member states, that member state enters that license into the compact database, and then all states that belong to that compact database have access to that and can determine if that person is suspended or revoked.
Thank you. Follow up.
Representative Millett.
And then my next question would be on residency. So if someone gets a resident fish and game license but also has one in another state, do you have that same database?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, we have access to other states mainly through law enforcement, but it's not a database like we would have if we pulled a car over on the side of the road with APSIN or NCIC to be able to determine that. We do have access to our own state's database to determine licensing and through Department of Fish and Game. Many times if we're conducting a residency investigation, it involves the law enforcement officer contacting that other agency and asking them to run them for licenses in that state. And then we receive certified documents from those states about licensing, and then we conduct our investigation.
Thank you.
And it's actually interesting, in connection with Section 2, it looks like existing law is you're already looking for other states, and this allows us to look at Alaska as well, which is interesting that we weren't doing that for purposes of Alaska licenses. Representative Eastman, you're next in queue, and Representative Cobb, I've got you in the queue.
Yes. Well, it occurs to me that we have a department that has some degree of expertise in revenue issues, and perhaps as a committee, we should ask the Department of Revenue to provide us a fiscal note on this legislation.
Representative Eastman, I actually think I addressed that earlier when I asked the major to get the figures on the restitution they've received over the last 10 years, and I would hope that we will learn more at our next meeting. But I appreciate the suggestion. Representative Kopp.
Thank you. Major, just a clarifying question. It's is it a prima facie offense, guilty on the face of it, if you're caught in possession of more fish than is allowable, like if you're allowed six in a day, sockeye on the Kenai River, if you are in possession of an animal that is out of season? You don't have to establish mental state, right? Isn't possession alone, it's a prima facie offense?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, yes and no. There's a lot of times there's other things that allow someone to possess that animal or fish, and there may be, you know, for instance, one that comes to mind is a proxy. You know, a proxy form allows you to possess more fish than what you're allowed. There's also seasons that are out there that are outside of normal seasons or permits that allow people to possess game sometimes. We still have to establish whether the season is in fact open or closed, whether they have a legal reason to have that animal or not. But if that's all true, then there is a regulation that deals with illegal possession and transportation, and that deals primarily with them simply possessing the animal.
Okay, so follow-up, Mr. Herman. So what you have just explained to us is there's due process, even on prima facie offenses. There still can be justification in the law for you would otherwise be guilty but for a number of things that can make it justified.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct.
Thank you. Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
I see on Section 8, Major, we're talking about taking brown bears at landfills. I guess Was there a particular issue with that where we're removing the criminal negligence mental state, and that's the one where you're within a half mile of a landfill? Now we're just saying if you take it, period, you are guilty of the offense. Was there a surge in brown bear taking near these solid waste disposal sites?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, what that section does is the same as the other ones. It basically creates two separate categories to charge. So it creates that you can charge it under a Class A misdemeanor, or you can charge it under a violation. When that statute was put in place, it has to do with brown bears being attracted to solid waste disposal sites. And obviously, when they're attracted to a site, they're much easier to take, and people were hanging out at the dump shooting brown bears, and the legislature at the time didn't want that to happen.
Representative Eastman, are you finished, Representative Kopp?
I had one more, but I can
go ahead and
wait.
You can follow up.
Okay. Thank you, Major. Section 14, if I could draw your attention to that section. We're adding a new subsection there dealing with the culpable mental state being no culpable mental state. That section begins with intentionally, but we're not removing that. I was wondering if you could just kind of talk us through 1605-790, just so that we're – that's the one obstruction or hindrance of lawful hunting, fishing, trapping, or viewing of fish or game. That's kind of an involved section, and there's several subsections. So just for clarification, thank you.
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Kopp. So 1605-790 is titled Obstruction or Hindrance of Lawful Hunting, Fishing, Trapping, or Viewing of Fishing Game. And that was put in place by the legislature in, it looks like, 1991. And it has to do with obstructing someone's ability to take or view game, primarily. And so what that section does is it actually creates a such under G, it creates that a person who without any culpable mental state violates this section is guilty of a violation. That's the same as what we're doing in other sections, but since it already includes that we could charge them with a misdemeanor if it's a serious violation, what it does there is it creates a violation section which we could charge them as a violation if we did not think it as serious as a misdemeanor offense should be. This section, there it is a complicated requirement. Certain things have to be in place before we can charge someone with that offense. And it talks about that it does not have to do with normal competitive practices. For instance, two people going after the same moose. It doesn't have to do – certain things have to be in place for you to be able to be charged with this offense. And I can walk through the statute if you like and explain it if you want further information about what it actually does.
Representative Kopp, would you like that explanation?
Not at this time, but there do appear to be several mental states in that same section, so it is a little bit complicated, but you're just saying, if I may summarize, you're saying this gives an option for the lowest level of violation to be charged if it appears that a mental state is an issue that just may not be able to be established.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Yes. To the chair, to return for a moment to our taking of brown or grizzly bears in Section 8. Now that we've, or in this bill anyways, we're creating two separate categories that you could be found guilty of. I'm wondering, does the strict liability option that we're creating, does that distinguish between the example we were talking earlier where you have a group that's simply using brown bears as target practice near a dump in contrast to someone who is trying to defend themselves or someone else from an attack? Does that strict liability still leave open making that distinction, or does it close that off?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman. So there's a separate regulation that talks about defense of life and property, and so you are legally justified in protecting yourself or defending yourself or another person or their property, And in that situation, if you did that under the regulation and the guidelines in the regulation, we don't, that is not prosecutable. You are legally justified in defending yourself.
Thank you.
And I had a question on in section 6 where you're talking about the fines for the commercial fishing violations, and you make a pretty consistent pattern of doubling the fine amount, but then for the third or subsequent conviction your maximum fine is not double the prior amount. Why if you're on a linear path with equal doubling, why for third time offenders, which in my mind would be even more culpable than the others, why are they not getting their offense level doubled? Or not their offense level, but the maximum fine. I guess the offense level stays the same.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. So Section 3 was actually added later than the original statute. So those the fines associated there with $15,000 represent the 50% increase over the original statute that was put in place. So Sections 1 and 2 were added first into the statute, and then Section 3 was added sometime later.
So you're saying if we actually do the inflation adjustment, the $15,000 is the inflation adjustment for when $9,000 became the maximum?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see anyone else, and we have public hearing coming next, so we will have many opportunities for more discussion as needed, but we're going to go ahead and open the public hearing on this matter. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on House Bill 129? Signed up, but he's not here. Going online, Matsu Alayo, Nick Steen, are you here to, are you available to testify on House Bill 129?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you so much.
Please state your name, any affiliation you may have, where you're calling from, and you've got 2 minutes.
My name is Nick Steen. I'm from Wasilla, testifying on behalf of myself. And I'd like to commend you for your update you're doing to through HB 129, but I would urge you to add an additional section. I would like to see the permanent revocation of hunting and fishing privileges for any individual that is convicted of a violation of game laws, particularly commercial operators being a living off a public resource. Some of the examples that I can quote from experience is one recently, individual was convicted of fishing in closed waters 25 miles from the nearest open area. Why should he ever be allowed to commercially fish in the state of Alaska again? I know of a game guide that was convicted of harvesting 3 brown bears in an area in which he had a permit to harvest 1 bear. And a guy who buried a harvested brown bear so that his client could harvest a larger legal animal. A guy convicted of conducting hunts non-residents in an area that was not open to non-residents.
Mr. Steen, can you back up just a little bit from your phone? You're really quite loud. Coming through pretty clearly, but a little bit hard to...
Okay.
That's better.
We as a state are not opposed to removing a CDL license for traffic violations or removing the medical license from doctors who misprescribed barbiturates and so on. Why does the state remove, why doesn't these licenses, the individual means of livelihood of flagrant violators of a fine and a short whether hunting or stealing a... Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Steen. I also note... Actually, don't leave yet. Representative Price-Tompkins has a question for you.
Thank you. Maybe not a question, but just a request if it might be possible to send in that testimony in writing owing to the sort of in-and-out nature of the connection. I for one, would be grateful.
I will have to have it typed up. It's only handwritten and handwriting.
Well, we're glad you'll take the time to type it, because if your handwriting is as bad as mine, it won't help us much. But the typing would be great, and you can send that to my office, and we'll distribute it to the committee. The other person, Mark Richards, with Resident Hunters of Alaska, was listed as in the room, but maybe I'm mistaken, and he's on the line. Mr. Richards, are you on the line, and can you hear us?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Clayman. This is Mark Richards. I'm the Executive Director of Resident Hunters of Alaska. I'm calling from Fairbanks today for my organization. We fully support House Bill 129. We want to thank the governor for introducing these changes. We certainly support the higher restitution fees. Also, I would like to talk about Section 3, where we have the addition of a show your license in electronic form. This is pretty much the same as the Representative Stadler's House Bill 260 that was just introduced. I just wanted to make a couple comments on that. Right now, you can apply online for a hunting, fishing, trapping license, pay online, you receive a PDF file, and you can print out your license at your home. So right now, that's already pretty much available in electronic format. I don't think the department is going to be able to duplicate duck stamps and salmon stamps. And so we look at it more as a redundant license, something to show when you already have your duck and salmon stamps on your paper license. And also, you're always going to have to carry a harvest ticket in paper form because you have to cut out the date and the month of the harvest immediately after harvesting. That's all I have on my end. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. Let me double check. Those are all the folks that I show online or in the room that want to testify. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 129. And I would ask, in broad terms, what is the general thoughts on the committee? I know there's real interest to see how much revenue is coming in. I'm planning to hear this bill again on Wednesday. My original plan was to actually have amendments due tomorrow, so we could take those up on Wednesday, but I recognize there's real interest in the financial question, and so my thinking, but I'm happy to hear your thoughts, my thinking is that we'll hear this bill again on Wednesday when hopefully we'll get more on the financial picture, and that we won't try to move the bill Wednesday, but once we've got that financial picture, we'll try to get it out. We're not meeting on Friday, but we'll try to move it out next week so we can keep this bill moving. Anybody have a different idea about how we proceed? I'm looking around and seeing broad support for the concept. Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we actually do have somebody who is able to testify as to the fiscal effects on the state, whether it comes from a department or not. And I don't know who exactly that would be, but when you figure out who it should be, could you ask them to be here?
Yes, I will do that, and I'm looking at Major Chastain. I think he understands that if he doesn't have the numbers, he can investigate and find the right person and make sure they're here. And I know the Fish and Game Commissioner was here earlier, and he's very interested in the status of the bill, so I'm fairly confident we'll either get information or get a note that it'll take them a couple more days. And I understand that the committee doesn't want to go further on this bill till we get that information, which I think is appropriate. And that's all we have on our agenda today. I don't think there's a point in reopening discussion until we have the financial information that is of interest to everyone. So with that, we're going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, January 31st at 1:30 p.m. following the Law Finance Subcommittee meeting. We amendments are not going to be due on House Bill 29 tomorrow because we're getting more information. And I note again, we will not be meeting on Friday, February 2nd. And with that, we'll stand adjourned. It is now 2:22 p.m.